morning. Welcome to Bank Chat. I'm Hugh Tewart and your co-host today, Danny Gittings. Danny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
On a Wednesday. Today, do renters get a hard deal? An accountancy group is urging the government to introduce a tax break of up to $100,000 for rental payments. Will this, though, actually help those paying rent, or will it just encourage landlords to pay more? Property owners get rates rebates in the budget very often. Public tenants get advantages like free months rent, while there are many schemes to help people get on the property ladder. But what about the 20% of the population who rent? Are they missing out here and in other areas? For example, are standard tenancy agreements too beneficial to landlords? What's the case for rent control, perhaps capping increases? How do rents compare now? Do they follow property prices or inflation? Is the government's business to help out tenants, or is it best left to the market? How do you support them without passing benefits to landlords? Join us, let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. You can email us, backchat@rthk.hk. Call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about those charges in the US against Huawei on fraud and spying charges. Joining us for our first discussion, we have with us now, together in our central studio, Kenneth Leung, who's a legislator who represents the accountancy functional constituency, Marcellus Wong, chairman of the advisory board of the Taxation Institute of Hong Kong, and David Webb, a shareholder activist and founder of website.com.
Kenneth Leung, good morning.
Good morning.
Kenneth, let's go to you first. Do tenants get a raw deal at the moment? Do you support the idea of a tax break for rental payments?
I think the tax break suggestion is controversial. Why should you put the $100,000 into the pockets of the landlord in the first place? And secondly,
it's not directly going in the pocket.
In fact, it is. And secondly, I think we should leave the choice in hands of the consumers, because some people didn't want to pay that higher the rent. They would not want to spend on education, on food, etc. So I would prefer, for example, in my own budget proposal, a cash subsidies to all families with newly born children. So I mean. And secondly,
wherever they live, you mean?
For children born to a parent who is a permanent Hong Kong resident and living in Hong Kong.
But they could be in public rental housing, or they could be in
a cash allowance so that they can spend on whatever they want. Let's leave it to the choice of the consumer. And secondly, I don't trust that the government can administer such a complex, rental, deduction scheme, because people can just pay rent to the father-in-law, brothers, sisters, cousins, and that makes the system very complicated, because look at it. The $4,000, rebate is already creating havoc in the government, and I don't trust that the government can manage such a complex scheme.
Well, they've had a scheme for years and years that if you're making mortgage payments, then
a mortgage payment is a different thing, because you've got a mortgage statement from the bank, but now you've got a written slip from
most
your
renters
cousin.
Have contracts, don't they? I mean,
they have contracts. They have a stamp duty on them.
The contract you can buy from a stationery shop for $2 or $3, and you can get it stamped very easily. So that, I have to tell you.
Okay, well, technical issues aside, but you have a more... Because, I mean, the argument is that renters are left out, aren't they? I mean, that...
I think they are more direct measures, but these measures are more controversial as well. Because, for example, you can have, as what you've mentioned, rent control, which I don't think we should do at this moment, because I still believe in the free market mechanism. And secondly, a second stage of vacancy tax on vacant property owned by, for example... foreign owners or property held by an offshore company. I mean, these are measures to increase, rental supply as well.
Okay, that's one down. I suspect we may get a fairly unanimous opinion on the panel today.
Marcellus Wong, what do you think of this idea of a tax break?
No, first, I agree with Kenneth that this is quite controversial. That's why we had thought about it for a number of years, but haven't proposed it formally, because there are a lot of implications into it. Now, on the one hand, we will see that this group of renters seems to be missing out. But then what about the others? We choose this group or targeted group to be to get some relief. What about other groups? we have to be very targeted to help really those who are in need. Are the whole group really in need or only part of the groups? And you have to set down the criteria or conditions,
but
that will make it very complicated.
But when you give people a rate holiday and they don't have to pay the rates, that's not because they're in need. It's because the government basically doesn't need the money.
Yes, that's a refund of tax overcollected.
I mean, if that's your principle, that we should apply equally to the people who pay rent. The government's got enough money. Give them a break too.
No, I think it's only an easy way out. The government should. I mean, I'm personally, or the taxation issue is not in support of any temporary measures of giving out rebates. If the government have collected more taxes than it needs, then it should reduce the collection, reduce the rate for paying rates instead of refund it in one go. So that is the principle.
Isn't the present system unfair? I mean, homeowners get mortgage tax relief, so essentially renters are discriminated against.
Now, that is the problem I have just pointed out, that you have to find it. You will make it very complicated if you find every group that needs to be. If it's to be fair, it should be targeted. But if it is targeted, then it will make the system very complicated, as evident by the $4,000 paid out recently.
You get a tax break for a mortgage.
Now that has been in place for a long time. Once you have given it, it will be very difficult to withdraw it, isn't it? It will even cause even louder noises in the market. So imbalance. I'm still very careful before introducing this new measure, because this will make things even more complicated.
David Webb, I don't suppose you're willing to play devil's advocate here and put the case for a tax break?
There is a much better way to do this, which I have written about on website.com this morning, in fact, and put in a plug for your show.
Was this because you knew you were coming on the show, right?
No, I was actually thinking about it yesterday when your arranger called and asked if I would do this. The fact is that the government does collect too much revenue. It is breaching the basic law, Article 107, which requires it to strive to achieve a fiscal balance. And that's one issue. But the way they collect it can be much fairer. The mortgage interest tax deduction is wrong in principle. The government in the UK abolished it in the year 2000 because they recognised that it tends to drive up house prices by lowering the cost of mortgages. It's unfair, as you say, because those who choose to rent don't get that deduction. It would be better to give everybody an extra $100,000 of personal allowance against salaries tax and let them spend it however they please, whether they want to spend it on mortgage interest, on rent, on holidays while they live with their mum,
But a lot of people don't pay income tax.
Or saving it.
But a lot of people in Hong Kong don't pay income tax.
That's true, and that's because they don't earn enough beyond their basic expenses.
Why are you benefiting the middle class in that way?
Because we're collecting too much. We're taking too much from the middle class already. We're overtaxing them. It would be very difficult to simply abolish the interest deduction from all those who've been living to expect it, taking out mortgages with the expectation of continuing to get it. And in fact, the government has extended it from 10 years to 20 years.
The obvious rejoinder to that is there's still plenty of people, poor people in Hong Kong. It's just that the money that we've got is not going to them, and it should be going to them.
There are poor people in Hong Kong, and welfare is a different subject.
Yes,
if you want to start talking about welfare, I'm game. But, I thought we were talking about tax this morning.
Yeah.
And so the tax system, what we should do is
I'm saying that your proposal benefits, in the end, will benefit the rich people.
It would benefit higher income people.
Sorry, high income people, not rich people. Yeah, I mean, not rich people.
I'm talking about abolishing as well the lower bands of tax to benefit the low to middle income earners, because we're currently, this is bizarre, right? We're on the first 50,000, you pay 2%, that raises 1,000. On the next 50,000, you pay 6%, which raises 3,000. What do you raise in total? On the first 100,000, you raise $4,000, and then you turn around and try and give it back to them in a handout scheme, which costs an extra $300 million to administer. It's crazy. So we should abolish the lower two bands and then introduce a flat rate of tax above that. And given the huge surpluses the government's been running, I think the flat rate of tax could be reduced to 10% or 12% at most, depending on what the calculations show and how much of the surpluses you want to return to the economy, having hoarded $1 trillion over the last 20 years. Now, if you have a flat rate of tax on salaries, you must also do that for profits and not have the gimmicks that Carrie Lam has introduced, like the half rate of profits tax for the first 2 million, which applies equally to a company which owns one flat and is owned by an individual as it does to a business and is simply going to encourage people to game the system.
For rich stroke high-income people, but for most people in Hong Kong, what you're talking about is irrelevant. For most people in Hong Kong, they're struggling. They see that the government has lots of money. They say, why, it's public money, why isn't it coming our way?
This is how they would take less of it from the public, which is the same thing as giving more of it to the public. I mean, it's the separate question of there should be higher welfare payments.
Not if you don't pay income tax or profits tax.
That's a separate issue. If you want to talk about welfare, I'm up for it. We can spend more on CSSA as long as it's means tested. If we stop spraying money around on things like the $2 fare scheme, which everybody gets, if we stop spraying money around on $4,000 handouts, again, designed to make sure everybody gets the handout. The problem is that the government mixes up the welfare system with the tax system by trying to do rebates on rates but with a cap, and rebates on income tax but with a cap, and so on. And so then you get into these endless arguments about whether it's fair that landlords with lots of properties who pay lots of rates in the first place should get back only a certain amount per property. So separate welfare from and the expenditure side from the revenue side, and then collect the revenue more fairly and in a less distortive way, so that people don't have to blow all their income on rent or interest on mortgages in order to get beneficial tax treatment. I mean, if we're going to have deductions for individual things like that, why not for holidays? Could I have a deduction for my annual holidays or a deduction for my computers or something like that? It ends up into an endlessly complicated system. So it's ironic that the ICPA yesterday was calling for simplification of the tax system at the same time as proposing an extra complication for it.
They usually go for the complicated option, I must say.
Well, that's because accountants like...
I'm surprised that Kenneth Leung's saying this, because it's all business for the accountants.
Absolutely. I mean...
I never say this. It's very fair to me.
You have a constituency, and you're perfectly entitled to advocate for it until we abolish it. That's the thing, that by introducing the so-called research and development deduction, which is 300% on your first 2 million... What Carrie Lam is doing is generating hundreds of jobs in the Inland Revenue Department. We're going to have to hire and pay for more people, and in the filing side for the accountants, in order to argue about what kind of expenditure is research and development. I mean, is next year's new Bluetooth-enabled food blender, is that R&D? Can I have a deduction for next year's toaster development? So... what they'll do is generate extra jobs that aren't needed in the tax system, and also cause companies to reclassify the things they were doing anyway and say, yes, that was always R&D, we just never said so before.
Okay, let's try and return to the main theme of this morning's discussion. We're looking at the position of the private sector rental households in Hong Kong. We were looking at the figures before we came on the show. About 500,000 households fall into this category. Do they get a raw deal at present? I mean, one proposal we've been discussing so far...
Oh, by the way, sorry, can I just point out that we already do have an enormous tax break for rental, because if your employer is sensible, then he will pay you a salary plus reimburse your rent. And the rent is only deemed to be worth 10% of your salary.
Do we know how many people actually benefit from
that? I have asked the Inland Revenue Department for data on that, and they refused to give it. They said it would be too difficult.
We suspect it would be a relatively small number.
It's a large number.
Or of higher paid employees.
How do you know it's a large number?
If you're middling...
Because it's rational to do it. I mean, in the bank I used to work for, virtually everybody took that benefit because it doesn't cost the employer anything. And all the employee gets is a separate reconciliation. So they get paid a certain amount, but part of it is called reimbursement of your rent. Well, I do it for my assistant.
Marcellus Wong or Kenneth Leung, do you know, is that widely done?
Yes, this is quite common, actually.
We're talking about middle-class professionals here. I mean, for people on lower incomes, of course, some of them won't be paying any salary tax anyway, but for low-income people who may be just inside the tax threshold, will their employers normally do it if you're working in McDonald's or something like that?
For lower-income people, of course not, because
they,
you can't carve out...
They won't be paying salaries tax to start with.
Or they're in public housing, I mean...
Yeah, that's a non-issue. They're living in public housing, they don't have the rent to pay in the first place, okay? So,
but basically, how about those who are not middle-class professionals but do fall into the tax bracket?
You're only surprised by this because you're not a full-time employee of RTHK, and they don't, because they're a government department, they don't do this, or they provide quarters to some staff.
Let me help up, David, because I will ask you in the Revenue Department about the data. They cannot withhold data from me if I asked for that figure. I think there will be a big chunk of people who is benefiting, from the no rental schemes allowed under the Inland Revenue Ordinance.
That loophole should be abolished because it basically means I'll give you a simple example. If you're earning 50,000 in total, but 20,000 of that is a rent reimbursement and 30,000 is your salary, then you're deemed to earn 33,000.
Hang on, we're talking about being too tough on renters and you're saying make it even tougher.
No, I'm saying
even that
you would abolish that loophole to make it fairer, and then raise the allowances so that people can get their rental deduction that way. They can spend the money on whatever they want, whether it's rent or whether it's holidays or saving.
But if look at it from the point of view of a renter, you know your prospects of becoming a homeowner are getting more and more distant. Your rent is very likely going up with the price of the flat, isn't it? Rather than inflation, your wages are not keeping touch with that. You're not getting the tax breaks. You're not getting whatever breaks are in reality going to homeowners and are going to public rental housing tenants. No wonder you'd feel aggrieved.
Rents haven't gone up anywhere near as fast as capital values, and that's because of the very low interest rates we've had for a long time. And rents are a component of the inflation basket, which the Census and Statistics Department calculates, which forms the basis of wage adjustments. So people's ability to pay rent basically determines rent, and that hasn't changed very much. The salaries have gone up to pay the rent. Rents are high. By global standards, but that's because we have very low tax rates on direct income.
When did you last pay rent, David Webb?
I purchased a property in 2006, so effectively I'm paying myself rent. The money I could have earned on that capital is now tied up in my property.
Yeah. So it's difficult for us to emphasise with those whose largest share of their monthly income is going out in rental.
No, I can empathise with people very easily, thank you.
But it's not something that you experienced yourself personally for a long time.
I paid rent for, or my employer paid rent, or reimbursed my rent for about 15 years in Hong Kong. I went through a succession of apartments.
So would you agree, all along,
my employer agreed to exploit the Section 9, Brackets 2 of the Inland Revenue Ordinance, which is this artefact from colonial times, on the tax break. My effective tax rate was much lower than it should have been.
Would you agree from that experience, sitting inside the tax, that it's often said that the situation in Hong Kong is biased in favour of landlords and against tenants, more generally? Let's put aside the specific issue of tax breaks.
The
way the contracts are structured and that lack of protection for, and of course protection for tenants has been reduced over the last...
No, I don't think it's biased. There was a bias in favour of tenants until we removed the right to a renewal. Basically, there used to be a system where you had a sitting tenant right subject to a lands tribunal that would determine the market rent if you couldn't agree it. Now, that's gone.
And you think that's a good idea? That's gone.
Yes, it's a free market. If you want to lease out your property, you don't want to be obliged to do that forever. And the only way you can get out of it is by moving back into it or redeveloping it. And that was the old system. You're suggesting perhaps could we have rent controls? Well, why don't we have, you know, food price controls as well? I mean, why don't we try the Venezuelan approach to economics, where the government just sets the prices and the quantities of things?
Well, I didn't mention rent controls, but now you've mentioned them.
Anyone else?
No, I don't favour rent control. But when you mentioned about the whether our system favours the landlord, I can't see why those pre-printed contracts and those contracts prepared by the agencies, I mean, the terms are not negotiable, because I don't think the tenants and the landlords are at an equal footing when negotiating a tenancy contract. There's no provision in our law saying that we are favoring, you know, the landlord. In fact, I mean, those pre-printed contracts, I mean, are terms and conditions which has been pre-drafted by somebody who favors the landlord.
You don't have to agree to that.
You don't have to agree to that. I mean, the tenants can negotiate. In fact, in our landlord and tenancy ordinance, if a landlord tried to evict a tenant before the expiration of a tenancy contract, I mean, he got fined, he can be put in jail as well, I think.
The two-tier profits tax does favour landlords. So if you have a day job and you also happen to own one property through a company, now you're only going to pay 8.25% tax on the first 2 million of net rental income, which is nearly all of it in most cases. There's not many apartments that charge more than that. So the government's just handed out a windfall to people who have incorporated one property.
Okay, let's put the tax system aside for the moment. We talked about it a lot, but more generally, I mean, if we look at other developed jurisdictions, whether you look at New York, where they still have rent control, you look at UK, where there are certain provisions for tenants to stay on at the end of a lease, and there is an argument to say that Hong Kong is out of step, and we have less protection for tenants.
The New York system is archaic. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. There are still a tiny number of flats, but
in UK, it's much more recent, though, you know, and in fact, they've been passing laws year after year, giving tenants additional protection.
Yes.
Property agencies can't charge them fees.
Well, they're a semi-socialist economy. You'd expect that kind of thing.
Semi-socialist.
They intervene in the private contract between
capitalist heart of the world.
Landlords and tenants. Yes.
All right. What about, for example, deposits? Deposits that are held by landlords, and mm-hmm. I have been told, are routinely kept with, you know, at the end of the tenancy for no very good reason.
Well, I had eight leases.
By the tenants. So anyone else got experience of that?
I had about eight leases and I always got my money back. But that is a matter of commercial negotiation between the two.
Well, should it be? I mean, in other countries, again, to cite the UK example, the deposit has to be held by an independent independent scheme, doesn't
third
it?
Party.
So it's not in the landlord's hands, and the third party can decide between the two sides if there's a dispute.
Yes.
Kenneth Leung, you were nodding there. Is that the sort of system?
Yeah, I think they have a system there, deposits held by a third party. And I think, if you want more protection to tenants in Hong Kong, I think that can be looked into. For example, the right to renewal of the lease, things like that, or the security of the deposit money. I mean, these are basic rules and regulation that can give more protection.
What do you think on right to renewal? Because David Webb was rubbishing the idea just now. I mean, do you think there's some justification for having some sort of right?
Well, I mean, people's circumstances are different, because sometimes the landlord may dearly need the property back, because, for example, her son or daughter is in dire need of an accommodation. And of course, there are circumstances where tenants will be in dire need of accommodation as well. So drafting a piece of legislation which will give, you know, either side an absolute right of eviction or renewal at the end of the tenancy agreement is just quite impossible. If we want to, you know, raise the protection to a tenant, we can look at a certain circumstances whereby, I mean, you know, the tenants could be protected in some, you know, very specific circumstances.
Nobody's really talking about that right now. Mm. Is it because landlords are more powerful than tenants in this city?
Well, you can say that the big tycoons are the landlords. I mean, the biggest, you know, multinationals.
Well, how many legislators?
They generally aren't. There's you know, millions of properties in Hong Kong, and large numbers of them are owned by individuals. It's a matter of private negotiation. If you want to establish a deposit-taking authority of some sort and have them all held by banks and have an arbitration
you
system.
You don't like that either, do you?
Well, no, it's interventionist. If people
it's
want
fair.
to... If people want to negotiate a stakeholder in their tenancy agreement, fine, but let them negotiate that. They'll probably decide it's too expensive and they'd rather just trust the system and the courts to get their money back should the landlord refuse to return it. And often, as you probably know, what a lot of tenants do is not pay the last 2 months of rent and it gets offset against the deposit anyway, because by the time the landlord comes after them for that non-paid rent, the tenancy has expired anyway. So okay. Practically, a lot of people get their deposit back by just running down the lease.
All right, well, let's just take a break for the news at 9 o'clock. An email from Rick, who says, make David Webb the financial secretary. He's the only one who makes any sense. If you agree or disagree with Rick and with Mr. Webb, let us know. Email backchat@rthk.hk or comment on our Facebook page as well. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Later, we're going to be talking to Mark Simon, I think in the US now, about Huawei and those charges. The weather forecast for today, mainly cloudy with some sunny intervals and a maximum temperature today of 21 degrees. The outlook, visibility relatively low tomorrow and it will be warm during the day. Cooler in the following couple of days and it'll become humid with fog early next week. The readings at the moment 19 Celsius and the relative humidity is at 69%. Welcome back. Bank Chat on a Wednesday morning with Danny Gittings and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're going to be talking about Huawei later and those charges against the company for spying and fraud. But we're talking for the moment about renting in Hong Kong. About 20% of households pay private rent rather than being owner-occupiers or being public rental housing tenants or owning their house through some kind of government scheme. So do these 20% lose out? Are they having a tough time compared to other people? This is in the light of a suggestion that a tax break of up to $100,000 be given for people paying rent to private tenants. We have in our central studio David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, Marcellus Wong, chairman of the advisory board of the Taxation Institute of Hong Kong, and Kenneth Leung, who's a legislator who represents the accountancy functional constituency. Once again, our telephone number is 233-88266. 233-88266. That's the number. Our email address, backchat@rthk.hk. A couple of comments from a rent controller in an email who says, the rental agreements need to change. Even though it's set up as a template, everyone uses it. It's specifically the first year lockup. And since I've lived in the same flat for 8 years, it renews every 2 years. So each renew puts a first year no move restriction on people rather than only the first year of residences. So some review of this needs to happen. Secondly, says rent controller, when you shout out the call-in number, you say it so fast we can't remember it or write it down and call in. So say it slower and more often.
I think you did him proud there on that one, Hugh.
Slow as I can go. He also says, how about using the rent paid to get a percentage knocked off a deposit paid for a home loan against a property up to the maximum of the deposit required paid for by the government? That comes from somebody who signs himself wanting to buy but can't afford. Marcellus Wong, there have been suggestions like that, haven't there? From the government, that the rent would go towards, effectively the rent goes towards paying off the property?
Marcellus Wong?
No.
I thought there was a proposal.
So don't they do that in the or for some
The government. Of course, it's not the government. I mean, some think tank may have come
actually
up with
Donald
this idea.
Zhang and is on his way out the door did suggest some wrinkles
on his way out. But I think it's a very complex system. I think it won't work if people want to buy. I think the government, of course. I mean, look at it. The government has this interest deduction scheme, which is based on the tetrarch government. We want people to own home, and then it creates stability. Is a social policy, and of course we got all other subsidized schemes right now run by the government to promote home ownership. I mean, they can carry on doing that, but I mean, setting aside a portion of rent to subsidize home ownership, I think, is a very grand scheme. It's complex.
The government policy is to encourage private home or people to be able to own their own homes, and you for private rental tenants, because because so much of their income has been swallowed by
the question is, why
rental.
Is it government policy okay, to direct people towards
that? I'm sure David Webb was going to come back to you. As far as you're concerned, David Webb, the government should stay out of the housing market altogether, shouldn't they?
Let people decide. It's not the government's job to make sure that you own a home, OK? It's make sure you have a home. And they do provide support currently through the public rental housing system for that, although I think they could just voucherise that so that the voucher is portable across the entire housing stock rather than dedicated to a particular concrete owned by the government. But it's their job to make sure that people have a basic standard of living, including shelter, and not to ensure that they die with the ownership of a property in their balance sheet.
Okay, now,
that's not something that everyone will ever be able to do. Some people can, some people can't. But why do we have all these fancy schemes to discount people and push properties and discount push people in that direction? The latest one is for people who have incomes which are too high for the home ownership scheme. And they are now engaging in a sort of lottery. I think there were 30,000 applications for 300 units or something of that order. Whenever the government devises these schemes, which effectively have a windfall in them, then there is a lottery effect where you get massive applications to benefit from it. But that's not really what governments should be doing. They need to focus on welfare for the needy, rental support for the needy, making that whole system more flexible, stopping the artificial distinction between public and private housing, and just say there is housing, and those who can't afford it will be given rent support from the government. That would be much simpler.
OK, we know you don't support the government policy of encouraging people to own homes, but if the government does have that policy and they apply it to other groups within society, isn't it rather unfair that private sector tenants are effectively left out of that policy, and because private sector tenants are the ones who are paying such a substantial amount of their income month for rental?
Yeah, one unfairness tends to create another.
Yeah, and I know, so, of course, you would say abolish the whole policy, right?
Said,
but if that's not going to happen, and realistically in the Hong Kong context it's not going to happen, shouldn't we apply
consistently?
So if
you think it's unfair, and I do, that you give interest deductions on home mortgage payers but not rent deductions, then stop calling them interest deductions and give everybody an allowance of $100,000 against their salaries, and they can spend it however they like. Okay, so the people who used to claim the interest tax deduction, they won't be any worse off. They'll still get the $100,000 of deduction. The people who are paying rent will get a new $100,000 of deduction to make it fair to them. And the people who are spending it or saving it on other things also get the deduction. So you remove the distortion from the system. And let people choose how they spend their incomes.
Yeah. Okay, some more comments in emails. Backchat@rthk.hk is our address. We're on Facebook as well. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, where Rod says, yes, all tax breaks are great. Taxation is theft. And still on the subject of David Webb, Phil says, Mr. Webb, Financial Secretary, sure, great idea, but think he's the wrong colour. And Vic says, dear Backchat, yes, I agree with Rick. That's, I think, on David Webb. Only Webb understands the issue from all angles and is sounding sensible. But do you think sensible is a word that can be associated with our government? Better they do not tinker with the existing system. They will make a hash of it. A little voice in my head tells me, ultimately, it will only benefit the wrong people, politely referred to as stakeholders. They should be referred to as the string holders. The government are just puppets. It's on a string, and we're all familiar with the small circle pulling the strings. That comes from Vic. And Joe Average says, in Hong Kong, as far as I know, we have over 155,000 compulsory orders by the fire department to put fire doors on houses, old buildings. These don't get done because the fire cartels or construction cartels have put the prices up to well over $5,000. Therefore, that's why families at low income haven't replaced them. The government really has to rethink their strategies. That comes from Joe Average. Kenneth Lang, right at the beginning, you said that this $100,000, if there was a tax break of that kind, the benefit would go to the landlords. Is this a problem when you're trying to help tenants? Is there anything you kind of do for the tenant? Really, the benefit goes in the end to the landlord.
No, I think there are various ways of doing it. If one, I mean, the extreme, you know, market intervention, like, you know, rent control, like, you know, imposing vacancy tax on all property owners.
I mean, we used to have rent control, didn't we?
We used to have rent control, but I don't think in the circumstances it will create more, you know, opposition from of course, the landlord at the moment. But, of course, the first tier vacancy tax we are imposing on developers. The developers have you know, voice out, but there are arguments. If people are hoarding vacant property and not letting out or sitting on it, just waiting for a speculative, you know, gain later, and people are waiting to rent and they can't afford the soaring price, then there could be a case that the government could, you know, impose vacancy tax on.
However, the evidence from the Ratings Evaluations Department shows that the vacancy rate is at an all-time low, similar to what it was at the top of the last housing bubble. So there is no evidence that people are irrationally holding out empty apartments. There's always a small amount of vacancy caused by renovations and between tenants.
But I don't think we're talking about that, are we? I mean,
but it is, as measured by an independent party, I think the Ratings Evaluations Department, or the Centre and Statistics Department, one of the two, they actually go around and assess by looking at dark windows at night on buildings and things like that.
Well, is that a very accurate
dark
rate
for 10
of,
nights in a row, then they're probably vacant.
It's not a very scientific way of measuring.
But it's the same method they've always used, and the data do show very interestingly that during 2003, at the bottom of the last housing cycle, the vacancy rate was much higher.
Nonetheless,
it's not now.
You say there's not even. It's an interesting idea, Kenneth Lung. Let's just go a bit further on that. Are you saying that you might, in principle, support expanding the vacancy tax?
Yes, I support the expansion of vacancy tax, because when I and my colleagues in the Legislative Council proposed it on developers, we've said it's the first stage. If the housing market deteriorates, if people cannot, you know, find, you know, rental property, then we should consider a second stage.
But it's heavily interventionist.
There were reports that developers had stopped new developments. Because they didn't want them sitting idle, because they were going to be taxed on them. So they were slowing down the rate of construction.
Well, I don't think that is a sensible commercial decision, because the return from selling flex is far, you know, higher or bigger than just, you know, paying an abysmal amount of vacancy tax. I mean, that's not a sensible decision.
Yeah, but the most amount of money you get by doing nothing at all, don't you, and sitting there waiting for the price to go up.
Well, if you think the price will go up again, I don't know. Really?
Do you think there would be support in the Legislative Council, Kenneth Lung? Kenneth Lung, do you think there'd be support in the Legislative Council for a second stage vacancy tax extending to private?
I think it all depends on the sentiment of society, and I think there is a high chance that there is enough support in the council.
It's interesting. This is the first suggestion. I know you oppose it everywhere, but I'll give you a chance. This is the first suggestion that's come forward this morning that might actually have a consensus behind it, David Webb.
You're forcing people then who own private property to rent it out against their wishes when they're perhaps waiting for their child to return from university and live in it. You know, then people have different reasons for holding their properties empty, but the statistics show that there isn't an ever-growing an amount of vacancy. In fact, it's shrunk right down because of the tightness of the housing market in recent times. And also, you're imposing a whole new burden of assessment if you try to police that system and get people to declare on pain of perjury or whatever whether or not their property is vacant. Developers who are now, I don't know, has the tax been passed on vacant properties for developers or not?
Still, the legislation is not finalized.
Not yet passed, The proposal to hit them, you know, does cause does modify their behaviour somewhat. As you say, they might wait and not apply for the occupation permit until they're ready to sell.
Okay.
They might work around the system. But generally speaking, developers like to recycle their capital through by buying new land, developing that, selling the properties, buying new land and so on in a continuous business cycle. They don't generally hoard property. A few of them have. They've chosen to try to time the market on luxury properties, probably not impacting the mass market anyway, if you look at things like West Kowloon Harbourside, where Hang Lung famously did that. You know, there are other companies that have perhaps done some of that, but that's their commercial choice.
OK, let's bring back get to another issue raised by our listener in the email, which is the issue of these two-year leases, that it is absolutely standard in Hong Kong when you sign a private sector lease that you are locked in for the first year of each lease. Now, I'm sure David Webb will tell us that this is a matter of negotiation between the parties, and in theory you could negotiate a different term, but in practice the vast majority of landlords and property agents will insist on that.
Market practice has changed over time. It used to be a standard two-year, and then people started negotiating break clauses where they could give notice after 12 months, perhaps 2 months notice after 12, or 1 month after 11, or whatever. And these things are a matter for negotiation.
But still, some the tenants, point our listener making, that you go for, and many of us will have experienced this, you go for a series of two-year leases, and each time you are locked back in for the first year.
No, it's often bilateral, so that the tenant also has the right to break the lease, and they're worried about committing for a two-year period, but they want the right to, you know, leave Hong Kong or whatever after a year. They think their circumstances might change. They may have a one-year break clause on both sides. Sometimes it's one-sided, sometimes it's two-sided. That, again, is a matter for negotiation.
Right.
And if you have that option, of course, there's a price for it. It means that you're going to have to pay a slightly higher rent than if you committed to 2 years.
Okay, Marcellus Wong, do you think they're fair?
Yeah, I think this is a free market, and it's up to the landlords and tenants to negotiate whatever terms. They could, like in the UK, it's 6 months. It's really a brick cross. You can leave earlier than the 12-month period.
And what about rent control? What are your thoughts on rent control, Mr. Lithman?
Again, rent control. Any government intervention is not good in this market. I mean, the root of the problem is really supply of the flats, and really the government should have done a better job than that. And all the root causes of higher rents or subsidies or whatever is because of the rising of the property prices, and if there are good supply of flats, then all these problems will go away.
How about the idea of a vacancy tax on private sector landlords that Kenneth Leung was saying he might be willing to support?
I think the problem is now more on developers hoarding flats and selling them as a sales strategy by not putting all these flats in the markets. In principle, I'm against it, because the root problem is, again, the supply and demand. The government, when they granted land, they could impose conditions that by what time period they have to complete all the flats and push it out to the market. If that is the intention of the use of the land, then it should be in that way and not for property developers to hoard them for windfall profits.
It's ironic, of course, not so many years ago the government ordered the home ownership schemes to stop selling. There was thousands of empty apartments under the HOS held back by the government in order to try and prop up the market. So they think it's okay for them to do that, and now they want to impose a tax on vacancies.
David Webb, I can't resist asking you. You heard the listeners' comments about you being financial secretary and so on. I mean, that may be a dream world, but would you be willing to give up your British passport if in the hypothetical world you were ever offered a position that required you to give it up?
I would, yes. I would take that job. I think it would be fun. I think we could do a lot of good and try and change things in Hong Kong for the better.
Okay, well, in these fantasy worlds, then.
All right, well, one more email on that topic from Umesh, who says, I second the motion on David Webb for Financial Secretary. Please find a replacement for Carrie, too, while you're at it, says Umesh. Kenneth Leung, maybe you could be the CE.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Kenneth Leung, legislator, represents the accountancy functional constituency. Marcellus Wong, chairman of the advisory board of the Taxation Institute of Hong Kong, and David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com. And as you mentioned, he's written a piece on the website this morning about rental.
Simpler, fairer tax system.
A simpler, fairer tax. You checked it out already. Thank you very much indeed. One and all, and to all those who commented through email.